This was the year the Kansas City Ballet reimagined the Nutcracker. Henry David Thoreau and Barbara Streisand got theatrical treatments. The Kansas City Symphony had its share of exceptional soloists, and there were all manner of exhibits and showings around town. Today we'll review all that as we take a deep dive into the Kansas City art scene 2015 with a panel of exceptional critics and observers of the scene. With us today, Robert Trussell is the theater critic and arts reporter at the Kansas City Star. Bob, nice to have you.
Good to be here.
Libby Hansen writes about classical music and theater for The Star, and she's a blogger behind Proust Eats a Sandwich. Libby, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thank you.
Elle Thorson is the editor of KC Studio, a position she assumed after 23 years as an art critic for the Kansas City Star. Elle, good morning to you, too.
Thank you.
And we want to know from our listeners, what do you think the highlight of 2015 was when it comes to the arts in the metro? What performances knocked your socks off? How healthy do you think the art scene is these days? Give us a shout, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, Bob, I need some context here. Is the art scene in the Kansas City area at something of a high watermark these days? Where are we on the old artsometer here, Bob?
Well, that's subjective, but I mean, I would say that just based on my personal observations, I mean, mainly I write about theater, but that's not all I write about.
Sure.
Try to pay attention to the other things. And I got to say, at least in terms of performing arts, we're at a high watermark, but I don't necessarily believe it's the highest watermark. I mean, there are signs that things are going to keep growing and progressing. And
what was the high watermark as you look back over your expansive career here, Bob?
Well, I don't know. You know, I've got a piece that's going to run in the Sunday paper. It'll probably go online before then. That is my year in review piece mm-hmm. that I write every year. So, and I sort of break it down from theater to theater, and because I'm not talking about any of the other stuff I wrote about during the course of the year, but you know, in the case of the Rep, you know, I'm picking out three shows that they did during the calendar year, and the first one was An Iliad, the one-man show with Kyle Hatley
right.
early in the year. And then Eric Rosen, the artistic director, came back with his show, which was called Hair: Retrospection, mm-hmm. which was all the music from Hair, but he did something very unusual with it. He brought in actors. It was a cast of 12. Six of the actors were either in the original Broadway production of Hair or they were in national tours.
We have some of them in here, yeah.
Or revivals early in the show's history. So, and then he paired them with six younger actors. Mm-hmm. And basically, each actor had a chance to sort of explain in a monologue how they related to the show and what the show meant to them. And it was fascinating, and the music was great. And I'd never seen anything quite like it. You know, it was just totally innovative.
So a pretty good year as far as you're concerned.
Yeah. And then they came back with Eric's production of Sunday in the Park with George at the Nelson Gallery. And that had never been done before. And they faced an enormous challenge because the Atkins Auditorium is an auditorium. It's not a theater. So they had to go to some amazing physical lengths to make it acceptable as a theater, and it was great. It was a triumph of design. Is what I said in print, I believe.
Wow. So, Alice Thorson, give us your stamp of approval or disapproval here. How, you know, is the art scene at something of a high watermark or not?
I think it could still go up. I feel like we're still kind of pulling out of the impact of the recession.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the mentality there in terms of, you know, cutbacks in programming, cutbacks in staff. And so it's starting to grow. I think a great example would be the Kansas Focus Gallery at the Nerman, where because of budget...
Out of JCCC?
Johnson County Community College. Because of budget cutbacks, they had to close their museum shop. And then within about, I think it was about 18 months... a donor stepped forward to finance transforming that same space into a gallery. And they were very happy with that solution because it gave them more display space for art. Yeah. And they're going to focus on Kansas art or artists that have a connection to Kansas. So to me, that's kind of a sign of like a glimmer of hope of how things are you know, gradually coming back a little bit. Yeah.
Libby Hansen, how are you seeing things these days?
There's a lot of variety, which I think is good.
I was going to say, on any given weekend around this town, there's a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah, which is also, it's frustrating for one person.
Yeah.
Because you can't be everywhere.
That's right.
At one point. But the variety is very encouraging. There's new groups forming and creating new art, which is hopefully always going to happen. So hopefully there's always going to be growth that will support just art in Kansas City.
Yeah. I'm wondering about how we're perceived nationally and dare I say even internationally. Alice, is our profile changing as you look around?
I think so. I mean, people are quite aware that this is a good place to see art and to make art and
so forth.
That's
a change from 10 years ago, isn't it, or am I wrong?
I think maybe we started turning the corner about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different programs coming into existence, like the Charlotte Street Foundation's Emerging Artist Studios, and you know, the Arts Council has the inspiration grants for young artists. So there is a support system for artists who are coming out of school, and I think the level of the programming is really, you know, quite excellent.
Yeah.
To sort of pitch our, well, let's say our March-April issue, Janet Koplos, who was formerly the editor of Art in America, mm-hmm. is going to be doing our cover story. And so, you know, I feel like that's kind of a national validation for what's happening in Kansas City.
Now, Libby, you cover the symphony. What's your sense of the standing of this town and its art scene, you know, around the country?
Symphonically or?
Sure, yeah. Or even broader.
Well, the Kansas City Symphony is a good symphony. It's a very good symphony. It's turning out exceptional to good,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much every series, which is encouraging and exciting. They are bringing in excellent guest conductors, excellent guest soloists that are national.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when someone comes here and has a good experience with one of our leading arts organizations, that's also going to go out into the nation and to their other, as they tour, you know, their concertos with other orchestras, you know,
yeah.
That'll be positive. That's a positive impact.
You know, I don't have any sense of this. I mean, is the symphony regarded as a top 10 symphony in this country, a top 25? Do you have just a broad sense of that?
I don't think I could say if they're where they are in the tier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good symphony. It's not at the level of Chicago, New York, San Francisco. But thankfully, except for New York, those orchestras have come through Kansas City, and we've had the opportunity to hear the top level symphonies. And that would be, those have been brought in. The Kansas City Symphony hosted the LA Symphony, which was fantastic. Harriman Jewel has brought in some symphonies on tour, and that I feel is very motivating also for the Kansas City Symphony. I hope it's motivating because the symphony players all know each other. You know, it's a small world.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to hear, you know, Beethoven 5 at a certain level, to give a very, very basic example. But yeah, I would say that the symphony has been growing, has a lot of potential for growth. Is well positioned to be a top tier symphony, I think. I hope.
Yeah.
It's on the right path.
Bob Strussel, you spent a lot of time at the Rep, and certainly from what I've read of your stuff and elsewhere, the Rep has its own sense of national standing. What's your sense of where Kansas City is when it comes to national standing from a theater standpoint?
Well, to start with the Rep itself, the Rep probably has a better national reputation than ever before in its history. And, you know, I've interviewed visiting artists over there over the last few years, and guys like Moises Kaufman, the director, and what they tell me is that in New York, theater people are talking about the Rep, because it has a reputation as being a place where guys like that can come here and work on new material.
Mm-hmm.
And they find it a very supportive environment, and the technical standards are very high. And I think beyond that, the Rep has done some things in terms of Eric Rosen specifically has done some things to garner more national attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of them was,
he's good at that. That's one of his one of his skill sets, right?
He's a very talented man when it comes to the theater arts, but he's also an excellent salesman, I have to say. But mm-hmm. But you know, his Venice, the show he co-wrote, hip-hop musical, you know, it made it to off-Broadway. It mm-hmm. made it to the public theater, which is a prestigious thing. And so when they do things like that, that gets people in New York talking, and the National Theater scene is kind of like a small town. They all know each other and they all talk. So
mm-hmm.
so Kansas City, because of the Rep, has a really elevated profile, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other part of that is that it affects the other theaters in a positive way, because, you know, local theater artists will sometimes work at the Rep, but they also work at the Unicorn.
Right.
And people will come in from out of town, and on their days off, they might have a chance to go see shows at other theaters. And so I think gradually these visiting folks are getting a sense that Kansas City is kind of like a theatrical hotbed of creativity. And it's true that there's a lot of things happening, and there's more things going to be happening in the coming years. So,
if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking and sort of assessing the health and the state of the art scene in Kansas City in 2015. We're visiting with Bob Trussell from The Star, Libby Hansen, who writes about classical music for The Star, and Alice Thorson, editor of KC Studio. You know, Alice, you know, has the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, this landmark institution in our town now, just a few years old, has it had the impact on the art scene that so many people had hoped it would when it first was announced?
Well, from where I sit, I would say yes, but you're really talking to me more as an audience member at this point.
Yes.
But, you know, I talked to a lot of people who hadn't gone to the symphony before, and it's made the performing arts a kind of a destination in this town, I
mm-hmm.
think, because people want to experience this. And of course, Kansas City is always very proud of, you know, structures, institutions when they get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I would say that it's had a very positive impact.
And Libby, as you look out the audience, as you cover the symphony, are you seeing new audience participation given the fact it's in a new institution and performing there?
Yes, they have a great program. The symphony has a great program for students. And so almost every show I've been to, there's a nice selection of, you know, 20 to 30-somethings.
Yeah.
Within the, you know, primary demographic.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a bunch of programming that's more suited for families and more suited for people who are a little more budget conscious, you know, who aren't students still.
So is that changing the arts and the audience that attends symphony performances? I mean, the word a few years ago was, you look out at the audience, there was a lot of gray hairs. And are you seeing a different demographic showing up? Can you tell a difference?
I feel like that demographic is still primarily set. But yeah, there are, I feel like this organization is making some effort to bring in the younger, the families, the
mm-hmm.
different sorts of people who might not have the opportunity in previous renditions of the organization to go to the symphony.
Yeah. What's been the impact of the Kauffman, Bob, on other theaters around town, particularly downtown? When the Kauffman first came online, lots of panic that it would impact the Folly, it would impact the other theaters as well. What are you seeing, the Midland and everything else?
I don't see a negative impact. Some people have told me off the record that they were concerned about its presence as a fundraising entity, because
mm-hmm.
because it needs to raise a lot of money every year, just like all the other nonprofits. And so it's one more player, a major player in the in the fundraising game, and people are concerned in that regard. But basically, the fact that the symphony and the ballet and the opera have this fantastic venue, I think probably means that more people are, you know, the Kauffman Center itself got a lot of buzz just from existing, just from opening. And so I imagine there were people who probably went to the symphony or the opera or the ballet who probably maybe hadn't been before or mm-hmm. had not been for a while because they wanted to see the new venue. And I think it's certainly gotten some national attention in the press. In fact, I was thinking about this on the way over here. I've been noticing for the last year or two that Kansas City keeps ending up on these lists, you know? And like just recently, someone declared the Nelson to be the best museum in the country, and that the World War I Museum was number two. Mm-hmm. And and I've seen, there was one over a year ago, I think, that said it was one of the best places for young creatives to live. And, you know, it's a rather long list of these things. I don't know how these things happen. Maybe it's an alignment of the planets. I just don't know. But it is happening. And I think having the Royals being the World Series champs doesn't hurt, you know, because anytime something draws people's attention to the city, everybody benefits. And I think, you know, Eric Rosen, to name one example, has had, you know, he has some interest in the sports world, you know, and he's had some interest in the Chiefs. And, you know, they're always looking to make these connections. And I just think the Kauffman is a great thing. And, you know, when it comes to performing arts, Alice was talking about how we haven't quite recovered from the recession.
Yeah.
In the performing arts, I don't really see that because the fact that the ballet was able to raise $2 million to do a new Nutcracker, which makes it the most expensive production, as far as I know, ever in town. And
is that what they raised? $2 million to put that thing on?
$2 million. That's what they said. To raise it through a capital campaign.
And it was worth it, at least, based on your review.
Well, everyone's going to have their own opinion. And it was, I will say this. You know, they wanted the audience to be able to see what they spent the money on, okay?
Yeah.
And there were times when there were so many people on stage that I thought, frankly, it looked a little crowded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd be interested in hearing Libby's opinion of it because she saw it. And I just, you know, it was perhaps
a little over the top.
You could accuse it of being excessive in some respects, mm-hmm. you know, but
did you share that view, Libby?
Yeah, I saw it. It's gorgeous. It's a beautiful, I think one of the biggest detriments of the older production was that it was old and wrinkled and these sets were outdated. Mm-hmm. And so that they definitely, as a visual standpoint, it's a gorgeous production.
Yeah.
I agree that it was very crowded. It was, we have all these people, let's use all these people. And that could have been dealt with a little differently.
Yeah.
It was very, there was a lot of things happening and the visual storytelling was, it was hard to follow.
Yeah.
And it's a story we all know. So that's not,
not good.
Ideal. I was also a little shocked, horrified that there wasn't a children's choir in the snow scene. That to me is very key.
Yeah.
And you have all these children, so I don't know who made that decision. I don't agree with that decision, but they didn't ask me beforehand.
I'm going to get to our critics, the best thing they witnessed in their particular area of interest after a break. But to set that up, I want to go to a phone caller here, Kelly from Leavenworth, who wants to offer up the best thing she saw this year. Kelly, good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Great. Yes, the best show I saw this year in 2015 was Bring It On. It was performed by Music Theater of Kansas City, and it performed early in January. It's a Music Theater of Kansas City is a group that highlights the youth in our community, and that this show highlighted some of the absolute most talented high school theater kids that this city has seen. It was a remarkable production. It brought in two cheer teams. It was high-flying, contemporary songs, music, and it was terrific. It was sold out three nights, standing room only, and it was by far the best show I saw in 2015.
Oh, that's a great recommendation. Kelly, thanks for calling it in. I appreciate it.
And by the way, that same group is doing 42nd Street, January 2nd and 3rd, down at White Recital Hall. So if you want to see some of the most talented kids, go to mtkc.org and get your tickets.
All right, Kelly, thank you. And if our listeners want to chime in with other best ofs they saw or witnessed this year, 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Okay, we'll get our critics best of after we come back from a break here. I'm Steve Kraske. You're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. Well, this hour we're reviewing the best of the local art scene, the worst as well. We're talking with Robert Trussell from The Star, Libby Hansen, who writes about classical music for the newspaper, Al Storson, the editor of KC Studio. We're looking for your recommendations for the best things you saw this year. 816-235-2888. So, Alice, what's the best thing you witnessed in your area of interest this year, or maybe anywhere else for that matter, as you look back over 2015?
Well, there's a number of things. I mean, up right now, actually, if you go to the Nelson, I think they have just a marvelous trio of exhibits up with the Benton exhibit and then also the Hale Woodruff murals.
Yeah.
Are just gorgeous.
The Hale Woodruff murals, remind our listeners what those are.
Those are murals that one of them tells the story of the Amistad slave rebellion, mm-hmm. and then others were created for Talladega College, and they're just they're colorful, they're vibrant, and I guess what I was really struck by is I loved the way they counterpointed some of Benton's more sort of stereotypical images of African Americans. So it's just a perfect counterweight without being preachy. Then in the photography galleries, they have an exhibit of civil rights photographs. And again, it just sort of opens it up even larger. So I think that the trio is just brilliant. And it works on different levels in terms of, you know, what it's expecting of the audience, because they've threaded a lot of film clips and so forth through the Benton show to make it very accessible. But I learned things about Benton that I didn't know from that.
That's
so
great.
That would be one thing.
You go to a phone caller here, Philip from Kansas City, Missouri. Philip, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Well, I just wanted to throw in 2 cents worth. By far the best thing we've consumed culturally this year, I thought, was the Rep's performance of an Iliad. It was basically a one-man show. It was Kyle Hatley.
Yeah.
But it was stunning. I mean, it was just an incredible show. The sets, the performance, the music, everything was just mind-blowing. And it was here. I mean, it was incredible.
Mm-hmm. Great recommendation, Philip. Thank you.
You bet.
What does that production do for Kyle Hatley's career, Bob? Do you know yet, or is it too early to tell?
Well, he'd actually already relocated in Chicago
mm-hmm.
by the time he did that show. He still had
a
relationship with the Rep. He'll be
That's
coming
right.
back from time to time to do things, but
mm-hmm. He's going places.
I personally think Kyle is going places, and Chicago is a good place for him to be to kind of make that happen.
Yeah.
He did some very innovative things. When he was associated with the Rep, he also was on the board of the Living Room, and he directed some pretty remarkable things at the Living Room while he
mm-hmm.
was here.
Mm-hmm.
He's a multi-talent. You know, the thing, he's representative of a group of people that I refer to as the hyphenated theater artists, because younger people don't just do one thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
they don't just act, they don't just direct, and he's part of a group of people who act and direct and write plays.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of those folks in town these days.
Libby Hansen, what was the best thing you saw in 2015?
The Lyrics Opera production of Silent Night, Kevin Putz's Pulitzer Prize-winning opera, was fantastic. And
mm-hmm.
and all last season, because of the World War I 100th anniversary, beginning of World War I, there was a lot of good programming from, you know, respecting that. And then also Harum and Jewel had their 50th anniversary, and they really, you know, pulled out all the stops with
mm-hmm.
their programming. It was just, it was a wonderful year.
Yeah. Bob, how about you? What was the highlight of 2015 for you?
Well, I mentioned the shows I liked at the Rep, and I saw good shows at almost every theater, but I would have to go to Kansas City Actors Theater, who in the fall did 2 shows back-to-back that represented some of the highest quality acting I saw all year. The first was the Gin Game, the old, you know, it's, I think it won the Pulitzer in its day, but it's an old play about folks in a old folks' home, basically sparking up a relationship that ultimately goes rather badly. But after that, he did an Edward Albee play called At Home at the Zoo, which was really a combination of his 1960 play, The Zoo Story, and a much later play that he wrote, and he put them together. Mm-hmm. And that had very good performances. Brian Paulette was in it, and Forrest Attaway was in it. And
Gin won the Pulitzer back in 1978.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in terms of directing and just high quality acting, those two shows, I thought, hit the high water mark for me. So,
you know, what's the Metro right? Any one of you, what's the Metro area doing right when it comes to growing the arts, both, you know, when it comes to participants and audience? We seeing any trends? Anything? What's the bright spot on that front? Anybody?
I'll speak to that a little bit. I think it's a real tightrope that you have to walk mm-hmm. between creating programming that speaks to people that are, you know, want the sort of cutting edge, more difficult things in the field, and then creating programs that will draw on a new audience. I do feel strongly that art is not entertainment, and that, you know, the purpose of art.
Well,
the purpose of art is to, you know, kind of stimulate thought, make you reflect on the culture, what's important. It investigates values, moral questions. It's not entertainment. It's not meant to be an escape. You know, so people will see beautiful impressionist paintings in the confectionery colors and they just think, oh, this just takes me away. But, you know, there's ideas buried in there. Yeah. And that's why that work has endured, not just because of the pretty colors. So
why doesn't your way of thinking about art sort of resonate more with people? I think most people look at art and think it should be entertainment.
Leadership. I think leadership, you know, and I think, well, you know, to plug the Nelson again, I think they're doing a very good job of achieving a balance. As I say, even with this current bunch of shows, you know, you've got dimensions that will draw in, you know, a general audience. But like I say, I could go through that Benton show and learn new things. I think what's really interesting is we're going to have a new head of the Arts Council here. And I think that's going to be a really pivotal moment in terms of, are we going to now gear that Arts Council toward art ideas, programs, and so forth, and really kind of make the arts bring the Arts Council up to the level of the things that the artists and the performers here are doing.
Well, that's an extraordinarily difficult balance to strike, though, because in the balance lies the fate of arts organizations that try to navigate this divide between, you know, informing and, I guess, and entertaining on the other side.
Well, you know, I do think that the institutions, and Libby can maybe perhaps speak to this a little bit too. I mean, the symphony will have those, you know, they'll have those chats where they, you know, try to explain the history and some of the meaning behind a given piece. You know, the Nelson does quite a bit of that with docents and different talks and so forth. So I think, again, the issue is to, you know, give people the real thing. You do not have to dumb it down.
Mm-hmm. Libby, what are you sensing here in terms of, you know, who's getting it right when it comes to growing the arts here in town?
Well, I can't speak to any sort of financial situation with any of the arts organizations. I'm not privy to that, and it's not my primary concern. I'm primarily concerned with product. But there are some smaller groups that are growing. That I, you know, the Owen Cox Dance Group has added like an educational outreach arm, I guess. Like Johnson County Community College again. This fall was their third season for their new dance partners, which
right.
is a very exciting program with taking local dance groups, and this year it was Oklahoma City Ballet instead of Kansas City Ballet, and matching them with a nationally recognized choreographer and creating new work. I mean, they're creating new work. And also there's another program with Kansas City Ballet, which I've never been able to see, but they have a new moves program where they're bringing in new choreographers and they're creating new work. And I think every time we every time anybody sees world premiere, I mean, that you should, that's always exciting. That's something that's never been seen. And there's a lot of groups who are smaller groups who are bringing new work that's never been seen. It's out every year. And that's incredibly exciting.
We're talking about the state of the arts in Kansas City as 2015 winds to a close. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Well, Alice, you raised this whole question of money and financing. And, you know, Susan Schmelzer had a piece in your KC studio not too long ago that once again raised the proverbial question of public support of the arts, which Susie pointed out is only 9% of the budgets of nonprofit arts organizations, just 9% coming from public sources. She also pointed out that government grant funding is not keeping up with inflation, and that's only making matters worse when it comes to financial stability. Why should government at all levels do a better job of funding the arts, Alice, or what's your view of that?
Well, at the risk of repeating myself, for some of the same reasons I cited earlier, I think that, you know, the arts also feed the soul. They stimulate creativity.
But it continues to be such a hard sell with so many governmental bodies around the metro.
Well, let us just hope that, you know, we have a younger generation coming up, and they seem to be less polarized, and that might be where the, that might be where the hope and the answer sort of lies. You know, we've got a generation that's kind of stuck in their arguments and so forth. So, you know, maybe a new day after the election.
You know, Bob Trussell, it seems like every arts organization is sort of hanging on to the cliff with its fingernails trying to survive financially. You know, a few years ago, the Metro looked at that bi-state arts tax. And I'm wondering, how would things be different today if that thing had passed and there was this pool of money available for so many of the different arts organizations in town?
Well, they'd like it. They'd like to have that money. So, it's all about money. You know, I wanted to echo something Alice brought up. What she said about people having to walk a tightrope. Well, that's certainly true of the nonprofit theaters, and you know, theater by its very nature is entertainment. You know, it's supposed to be. No matter what kind of play it is. Mm-hmm. You know. A few years ago, KCAT did Long Day's Journey Into Night, which is probably one of the bleakest, most depressing plays ever written, but it's a masterpiece. And they did a fantastic production of it. And people who went to see that came away changed, very moved, and impressed by the quality, the commitment of the actors. And but, you know, Eric Rosen, whether it's Eric Rosen at The Rep or Cynthia Levin at The Unicorn or Rich Baker out at Starlight, Rich has 8,000 seats to fill every night.
And, is that what Starlight holds, 8,000 seats?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, the thing they've done out there is they're going to be having an indoor series in January. But
as a way to do a year-round kind of thing.
Yeah, they want to have a year-round presence and maybe develop a new audience. And but these guys all have, you know— the people at the nonprofits especially are always sort of weighing the artistic virtue of the material they're considering doing with whether it's going to fill the seats or not, you know. And over the years, I've seen some very good shows that didn't fill seats.
But to what extent would a bi-state arts tax begin to change that thinking and free up artistic directors to do, you know, to go for artistic quality more than popular appeal more often?
Well, if they had more money, they wouldn't have to worry as much about the box office revenue. But the box office revenue is not insignificant for most of these nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And so it might change it to an extent. I'm not sure if it would have a major impact, quite frankly. I mean, they would all appreciate having more money to work with.
You know, Alice, I'm asking about this bi-state tax, and yet there's, as far as I know, there's no real talk, no real serious consideration of a new bi-state arts tax on the horizon. Are you hearing anything differently?
I have heard nothing about that. Yeah. You know, I do think, though, just as, you know, if you walk into an art gallery, they're going to have some kind of, you know, pretty landscapes and so forth that you know, bring in big dollars that everybody likes. And then that allows the dealer to carry some of the more, you know, difficult cutting edge people. So, you know, in a way,
Christmas Carol at the Rep you're talking
about.
Yes,
exactly. So you kind of have to do both And go ahead and let the big popular productions help to finance the more difficult ones. But make sure you don't drop the difficult ones.
Yeah. Libby Hansen, coming back to you for a moment, how would you describe Michael Stern's tenure as music director of the symphony? I think he's now in his seventh season as conductor. Bob was talking about Eric Rosen at the Rep a few minutes ago. Rosen and Stern being perhaps the two best-known artistic director-type people here in town. What's your sense of Michael Stern?
He's an excellent... I mean, he's very well-connected, naturally, which mm-hmm. is a boon. And infrastructure-wise, I don't know if he's bringing in the guest conductors and the guest artists, but they've been at a very high level, so that's probably mm-hmm. In keeping. He's an excellent front man. He's a very personable presence, you know, mm-hmm. very recognizable. And artistically, they've been doing very well with the recordings. And I mean, they've got a Grammy nod for engineering, but still, that's the Kansas City Symphony with the Grammy nod.
Yeah.
Bringing in some new composers, and it's. I think there's still growth there. There's been a lot of new players coming in, and unfortunately a lot of turnover because these new players are very good, and they're going on to other orchestras eventually, you know, they yeah. win other auditions, but there's a core of really good players, and it's I would hope to see even more rapport develop with the conductor and the players and just build on that.
Haley emailed us her picks for the best things she saw in the Kansas City area in 2015 when it comes to the arts. Two great performances not yet mentioned, Tosca in the spring, Melody Moore in the role was extraordinary. Then she points to Carlos Prieto's recent guest conducting appearance with the KC Symphony. I haven't heard this group play so well in many ways in years. Years all capitalized.
I agree.
Yeah.
The Prokofiev Five was fantastic. My husband went the next night and didn't read my review mm-hmm. beforehand and came away and was like, oh my gosh, yeah. Like, he was thrilled with it. And then the same conductor, Carlos Miguel Prieto, came last season and did a Romeo and Juliet suite.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by far the best thing I had heard last year. So, yeah, she was spot on. The Tosca was also very strong. I just preferred the Silent Night last year.
Yeah. Beth wants to give us some kudos, I would like to put forth the brothers' size at the Unicorn. Two of the three actors I had not seen before and were all excellent. The audience was wowed. And the KC Fringe had a great group of entertaining plays at the Living Room, which maybe is getting back to what you said before, Bob. Yeah. You know, which of the area arts organizations in town is just killing it these days? Is there anything, any one group that seems to be more ascendant than anywhere else?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's mm-hmm. they're all sort of they've all most of them have reached a level of where they're established. Mm-hmm. And
is there a hot organization in town right now?
Well, the word hot is problematic, but I will say this: you know, the Metropolitan Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, which is on Main Street, about 36th and Main, just acquired the old Warwick Movie Theater, mm-hmm. which is up on Main, and. Once they get that open, their plan is to have it not just be a theater for their shows, but to be a kind of performing arts center, small one, mm-hmm. Where other groups can use the space. And that's going to make a big difference. Plus, there'll only be about a block from the Unicorn Theater. So suddenly you've got this little mini theater district right there at Main Street, Westport, and 39th Street. And
that's cool.
That's very cool.
So. Yeah. Alice, what would you point to?
You know, I'm kind of waiting. I think we need some more galleries to kind of fill in. We lost a lot of art galleries with the change of a generation. And a younger generation hasn't really stepped forward to kind of join the fray with, Sherry Leedy and Bill Haw and so forth. It just feels like we need at least one more strong commercial gallery and... some more artist-run spaces as well to just kind of fill it out.
Mm-hmm. And is that going to happen in 2016?
I've not heard anything. But again, you know, as we get, you know, as the economy settles more and, you know, this next generation starts, you know, settling in, I mean, I could envision that happening in the next year or two.
Now, I'm wondering if we're ever going to see a major motion picture made in this town again. It just strikes me that it's been a while since we've seen, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Bridge and, you know, Ride with the Devil. Maybe I'm missing it. Maybe there have been some lower key efforts being made. Are we seeing anything out there?
Not that I'm hearing about.
And why is that?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think, let's see, let me think. I don't follow it closely, but I think the Kansas City Film Commission rather recently was sort of reconstituted.
I think I've read that as well.
So it might make a difference, but you're right. We haven't had much major film production around in the two-state area, really, for a while.
I'm also wondering, to what extent is Kansas City a town for young artists just starting out? And to what extent is Kansas City a city for established artists, leaving little room for the rookies? Alice, what's your sense of that?
I think it's actually pretty good for both, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said, there's different supports. Well, having the Art Institute, the Kansas City Art Institute here, just, you know, it's an automatic sort of talent feeder system, and we're managing to keep a number of artists or even have them come back after they go to grad school.
And that institute leaves 2015 in a whole lot better financial shape than it went into 2015.
Yes, and everybody's very excited about the new...
$25 million?
Yeah.
Dollars?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel like there's a pretty good support system. System for you know, mid-career artists as well,
mm-hmm.
And again, you know, as a community, people sort of invest in artists if they've been here for a while. There's a real kind of loyalty in pride. Wilbur Niewald would be a great example.
Yeah.
So, you know, people who stay here, I think, tend to get rewarded.
Yeah, Libby, you were nodding your head when Alice was saying it's a pretty good town for young artists starting out. Is that your sense as well?
Yeah, I mean, same with the Arts Institute. You have the Conservatory of Music and Dance, which is going to hopefully in the future be moving downtown, and then you're going to have this just sort of influx of young, hungry physically, but hungry to create.
Yeah.
And we see a lot of that. There are people who are, or UMKC grads, who have stuck around and are creating and are excited about living in a situation where you can have a family and have a home,
mm-hmm.
and still be doing your art, which is not as easy in other locations.
Amy wrote in to say that she enjoyed Once at the Kauffman Center from the Theater League. She said it was just absolutely fantastic. We just have a minute left here. What are you looking forward to most in 2016, Bob Trussell? What's coming up that has you juiced a little bit?
Well, I haven't written about this yet in totality, but next year we may have a Kansas City Black Repertory Company.
Hmm.
We're going to have pretty definitely
a
Kansas
new company
City
in
Irish
town.
Theater, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there might be a Kansas City Pan-Asian Theater Company coming online, too.
Oh,
so there's a lot of things happening with the small theaters. It looks pretty exciting.
Libby, what are you looking forward to in 2016?
Well, almost immediately there's Jeremy Dink, pianist. Jeremy Dink's going to be with the Kansas City Symphony, which he's just an amazing artist. And they're going to do Chairman Dances as well. So those are two of my, like, right off the bat, excited about.
Alice Thorson, how about you?
Well, the huge event coming up in the visual arts is the meeting of the National Council on Education in the Ceramic Arts. It's a huge ceramics conference coming here.
Yeah,
you know, more than 100 exhibits of ceramics art throughout the city, speakers, workshops, and so forth. So it's a huge deal. So Clay will have center stage in first part of 2016.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming in today. Bob Trussell, Libby Hansen from The Star, Alice Thorson from KC Studio. Happy holidays to all of you. Thanks for coming in today. I sure appreciate it. Una Walkenhorse is attempting to establish a career in a city in which her father has been a prominent musician for more than 30 years. As a solo artist and as a member of the Rainmakers, Bob Walkenhorse is one of Kansas City's favorite sons. Local Listen features the title track of his daughter Una's album, Scars. It's a song that indicates that talent runs in the family.
So, have you lost in me? like the man you've become, like the sound of the hum from the play that I wrote home, or the way that you've marred what was left of a heart so it's easier to be alone.
Luna Walking Horse will perform a free matinee show at the Record Bar on Saturday. You can listen to previous shows and download our podcasts at kcur.org/up-to-date. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up-to-date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow, tune in for Christmas songs you're probably never heard of. That's tomorrow on KCUR's up-to-date. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Lisa Rodriguez, and Beth Lipoff. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.
Words. 'Cause if you